It's a galactic discovery that could change our understanding of the entire universe. Early on New Year's Day, a grainy image appeared from space. It looked kind of like a snowman more than a billion miles beyond Pluto on the edge of our solar system. It's technically called 2014 MU69. It's more commonly known as Ultima Thule. It is the farthest object that scientists have ever photographed, and it might reveal details of the earliest moments of the universe. Let's explore how this discovery came to be and what we hope to learn from exploring deeper into space. Sean O'Keefe was there at the start of the mission that found Ultima Thule. He's the former administrator of NASA and was also Secretary of the Navy. Today, he is a professor at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. Professor O'Keefe, welcome to 1A.
Hi, Joshua. Nice to be with you.
We'd love to hear from you, too. What questions do you have about this discovery and where space exploration is headed? Maybe you work in space science and you're keeping a close eye on Ultima Thule, on the New Horizons mission, or on any of the scientific research that's being done at the frontier of astronomy these days. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@wamu.org. First of all, you must be, I assume, very, very proud to see these latest findings from Ultima Thule from the New Horizons mission.
No question. This is yet another extraordinary accomplishment from my colleagues and friends at NASA who really are exploring the edges of not only this solar system but beyond. And it's a great achievement and one that's been a long time in the making, that's for sure.
Explain long time. How long a long time has it been?
I think I met the very first principal investigator, science investigator, on the New Horizons mission when I first arrived in the job as NASA administrator in 2001. He had already been planning this mission 25 years previously. So this was something that had been a long time ambition, has something that for decades has been in preparation. It took the better end of that time in order to launch it by 2006 and then another decade to arrive at the destination at the edge of the solar system of what is known as Pluto and the Kuiper Belt over the course of that time. And now it's gone beyond that. So this is something that exceeds the expectations in many ways and is giving us an insight, very close up and personal kind of insight of understanding what's in our own neighborhood, our own solar system.
So he conceived of it back in 75, 76. I mean, Roots was in 1977. That's how far back this goes. And then you joined NASA in 01. It launches in 06, which I think, you know, was like Facebook and Twitter were just in their infancy at the time. And now we're finally getting these images. It's kind of incredible how long it takes to get these missions up off the ground and then to get us back data.
Well, and it also tells you how far away things are. I mean, it's just in this small little solar system in which we all revolve around one star in a galaxy that is billions of stars. We just are barely beginning to understand our own neighborhood here. And so as a consequence, this is, you know, the analogy of trying to understand what's in your own little community and where you live. That's what we're starting to do. We're at the age of sail in space exploration right now. And yet this is a monumental achievement to understand more about our own community, our own neighborhood, our own solar system.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Ultima Thule. What exactly is Ultima Thule?
Well, it's a formation of two icy spheres, as it were, that over the course of the last 4 or 5 billion years kind of pulled together in the Kuiper Belt, which is this stream of icy formations that are all part of the Neptune orbits overall. And as a consequence, they formed up independently and then gradually merged together, which is very much unlike everything we've seen in the rest of the solar system, in which anytime you have two spherical objects that will merge, it usually is a collision. It's not a gentle formation. So something happened here that's going to be interesting to study over time and figure out precisely why these two pieces, Ultima and Thule, both came together as they did at some juncture over the course of the past time in a way that's fundamentally different than any other observation we've seen in the solar system.
Now, the spacecraft that collected these images and is sending back this data is called New Horizons. Tell us about New Horizons.
Well, New Horizons is a 1,000-pound spacecraft, roughly, that is shaped with a dish on it, and it's about 7 feet by 7 feet. That's the size of it. So you got to pack in a lot to have something that's going to travel what is now 4 billion miles in a confined space, just like we defined here and described. That is got instrumentation and capabilities to image various spheres and planets and moons, et cetera, that they'll come across along the way. But mostly it was designed for the Pluto-Kuiper belt observations. And that's why its trajectory was intended to pass through that neighborhood. So it passed by within a range of about 2,000 miles. And that's the closest we've gotten to anything in the formations here in that area going forward that really gave us a much more vivid set of images of what this formation, Ultima Thule, looks like and why it is so unique relative to anything else we've seen in the solar system.
I know we have to pause in a moment. We'll talk more on the other side. But did we have a sense that we might fly by something like Ultima Thule when we launched New Horizons?
I think it was envisioned as one of the hopes. The basic focus was getting to Pluto and then ultimately exploring what's in the Kuiper Belt. The Kuiper Belt is a formation of lots of icy objects. And so it was only defined, ultimately, and discovered by Hubble, as a matter of fact, in 2014. First time we'd seen it in any level of granularity that would then define it as a destination that could be examined more closely. I mean, this is about a 20-mile-long combination, definition of a contact binary, which is these two formations of Ultima and Thule together, that's about 20 miles long. And that's what Hubble just saw just 5 years ago. And so the idea of passing by this particular object was developed shortly after that in 2015 when they adjusted the trajectory of the spacecraft to be able to do that kind of traverse.
I want to talk more about the mission when we continue with former NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe. We definitely want to talk about some of the technology. Just did a quick Google search back in, the mission launched in 2006. The number one smartphone back in 2005 was the Palm One Trio 600. Top smartphone that year was the BlackBerry Pearl. Remember those? That's the technology we're talking about that brought us this kind of discovery. We'll talk more about the technology, the discovery, and your questions in a moment. Stay close. Back now to our conversation with Sean O'Keefe, former administrator of NASA, currently a professor at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. We'd love to get to your questions about Ultima Thule or whatever's been going on at NASA these days that has you looking up and wondering what's out there. Email us 1A at WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page. Richard's listening in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Richard emailed, "I'm amazed by the ability of this mission to communicate good data to Earth from that distance at a reasonable rate. I hope your guests can describe the communication system, power, bandwidth, etc." Sean, I mentioned what the latest in smartphone technology was like back in 2005, 2006 when this mission launched. I imagine that's one of the challenges of something like this is you kind of go with the technology you've got and you know that the technology is going to be out of date by the time it gets to where you're going, but you kind of do the best you can with what you have.
Exactly right. And moreover, you've got to develop it in a way that's going to have the least amount of weight because you've only got so much room to put things on to a spacecraft that's going to travel that far and that long. And it's got to be reliable and it's got to be self-sustaining. It's got to have a very limited, power source that will constantly keep it operational because you can't go service it. So it's got every number. I mean, the range of limitations on something like this are incredible. You've got to think through from an engineering and technology standpoint. So you're absolutely right. You've got to go with the most fundamental, most reliable, most best known capability that you have that can download information and so forth in whatever span of time. But it's going to be comparative to today very slow because you're using a technology that was developed at the time and deployed at the time with a degree of reliability that was high.
Now, is that just kind of the nature of doing space exploration? I mean, exploring space is expensive and it takes a lot of scientists and it is the frontier of science, literally. Like we're literally stepping into the unknown. Are there ways to speed up that process between the idea and the execution, or is that just kind of the nature of exploring space?
Well, there's a couple of different limitations that need to be conquered. First one is the capacity for in-space propulsion. There isn't any. Well, you know, the speed that you have on a spacecraft, no matter what it is, whether it was the space shuttle, the Mars exploration rovers, New Horizons, whatever, is always going to travel at a speed that is roughly, and there's some variations to this, but it's roughly governed by the pace by which you launch it out of this atmosphere, out of the Earth's atmosphere, and into space from that state. So all the 90% of the power you got is going to be expended just getting off this rock that we know as planet Earth. And then from there on, it's got to sustain itself at whatever speed you put it into it, whatever trajectory you launched it to, whatever orbit you planned it to be in, and whatever pattern it was intended to intercept at that point. That's going to be pretty much governed by how well you did it on the front end. And from there on, you have only a little bit of adjustment capacity because there is no in-space propulsion capacity. And that's something I think that NASA's spending a lot of time right now thinking through, trying to figure out how to introduce as an ability to actually propel a spacecraft at a faster rate, potentially, from point A to point B, as opposed to relying on laws of physics and Isaac Newton's principles and all right. The other basics that have always been immutable.
Or for fans of Star Trek who, you know, we see ships flying at impulse power and warp speed, like that kind of being able to bend space around you so that you can travel faster than light. In our current technology, you get all
it's
your
all
propulsion. Right. You get all your propulsion. The idea that you take off from the Earth at one speed and fly through space at a higher speed right now, it's, you know, good luck. Like, you wave a wand, you'd have a better chance of being able to do that. But other than the propulsion, and I won't say that you just ruined Star Trek for me, but you put it in a whole other light, so thank you very much. But other than that, we are beginning to make some findings from Ultima Thule. Let me play a clip from the NASA New Horizon principal investigator, Alan Stern. Here he is speaking last week, sharing some of what we've learned from the images that have come back so far.
So, in my line of work, we like to interpret even images like this. And so what can we tell you from this image? Well, first, we have a better handle on the size of Ultima. It's about 35 by 15 kilometers, and you can see a scale bar in miles there. Secondly, you see its irregular shape, and there are two possibilities here. One possibility is that it's bilobate, with the upper lobe being smaller than the lower lobe, so they would be asymmetric. Or it may be that these are two things that are actually in orbit around each other and just blurred together because of their proximity.
That was Alan Stern, the principal investigator with NASA's New Horizons mission, speaking last week. Bilobate meaning two lobes, two parts stuck together. We've also learned from the early data that there is no evidence of rings or satellites that are larger than a mile in diameter. There's no evidence of an atmosphere. And the color of Ultima Thule seems to be similar to other objects in the Kuiper Belt, but NASA is still kind of analyzing the incoming photos of this. Are there any other major aspects, Sean, Professor O'Keefe, of this that you hope the New Horizons mission can answer? For example, it captured a fair amount of data about Pluto, which has been a controversial sometimes planet. What other things would you like New Horizons to answer?
Well, this is going to be fascinating to see because it's going to take about another 20 months before we see the download of everything that we believe that New Horizons collected from Ultima Thule. And so as a consequence, the, you know, the pace of how it can communicate, how fast it can download, and so forth, and then the six-hour transmission time it takes to get from there to here, 4 billion miles traveling that long, we're going to see this coming out very gradually over the span of the next year and a half plus. And it is going to tell us a lot more about the things we talked about at the top of the discussion, which is why it is that these two formations, whether, as Alan says, they're joined or maybe they're just orbiting very close to each other, that's very unusual. It's something that we don't see typically in the rest of the solar system. Everything else we see in our solar system, certainly on the, for example, on the far side of the moon, it's a lot of impact craters that tell you there's been a lot of bombardment over the span of, you know, billions of years that either have created a range of craters and so forth and reformations of the geology. That is not the case on this particular formation. And trying to understand why that's the case is going to be very interesting. That'll be an important way to understand the very evolution of our own solar system, our own neighborhood.
Yeah, two of our listeners who happen to both be listening in Grand Rapids, Michigan, had questions about what these images mean. I imagine it's too soon to have answers to these questions, but I'll put them out there anyway. Brad tweeted, "This looks like two bodies collided and stuck together. How could this have happened, or what theory is there as to how such a misshapen celestial body came to be?" And Carl emailed, "Why didn't additional objects accrete to it over the billions of years?" Professor O'Keefe, I presume that it's too soon to know the answers to either of those two questions, either why they stuck the way they stuck or why other things did not also stick to them.
Stay tuned over the next year and a half as they try to sort through exactly those questions and the data that may inform the answers.
Oh, and Rebecca emailed, "So are we calling Pluto a planet now?"
This is a space scientist argument that has gone on for some time. I'm certainly not going to engage in it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Is he going to take the spade or is he going to... I'm glad you... Because that could be 2 hours of this program and we still would not solve the problem. Let me ask you about a few other missions besides New Horizons. And we welcome more of your questions about New Horizons or Ultima Thule in the time we have left with Professor Sean O'Keefe of Syracuse, former administrator of NASA. There are other projects alongside New Horizons collecting new data about Ultima Thule and other missions. We've also come into an era where space travel has become more commercial, where there are other companies that are getting into the business of space. Arouette tweeted, "Please comment on the changing nature of public and private interests in space. How do companies like SpaceX or Blue Origin change how we think of space as compared to the old NASA days?"
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good example of how fast the pace of technology insertion is occurring at this time. I mean, using technology for all manner of commercial opportunities that have evolved from either exploration projects or other public endeavors that were engaged. And so think about this like a very dramatic acceleration of the civil aviation industry that we see around us today. The fact that we can get on any airline to go just about anywhere we can think of on this planet is a function of how long it took in order to evolve that technology, develop it into a capacity in an entire industry and an entire capability, and go forward with our capability, any citizen, to get aboard an aircraft and fly wherever you want to go. It's following that same pattern. It's just happening at a faster rate, which is a very clear illustration that Moore's law is real. You're going to see a fast acceleration of technology development as well as the cost of it becoming more and more affordable over time as it becomes more and more available. So what's happening right now in space is all the things NASA used to have to do on its own is now being supported by commercial industry that is taking the same basic technologies, the same fundamental infrastructure, the same laws of physics, and the same basic chemical propulsion capacities, and now in turn developing faster ways, less expensive ways to accomplish basic repetitive mission objectives. That's what we're seeing with SpaceX now and others. who are resupplying the International Space Station along with the Russian partner that is part of the International Space Station Coalition. So you see a division now of this where the private commercial space access derived from the same technologies, only now developed using current technology in a way that's making it much faster to do, are achieving those objectives at a much lower cost.
And by the way, just to clarify, Moore's Law is a principle from Gordon Moore, who was a co-founder of Intel. He postulated back in the mid-60s that the computing power of computer chips would rise and the cost of advancing that technology would cut in half at exponential rates. And Moore's Law has, in large part, been found to be mostly true based on the speed of computers and the rate at which computing has accelerated. Leslie emailed...
You're an outstanding student, Joshua.
You know, well, thank you, but, you know, Google is a thing. So I asked the Google thing. But I had heard of Moore's Law, and I do take your point in terms of the kind of public-private nature of space exploration or these kind of new technologies. The internet, you know, is as something that had connections to DARPA and then became commercialized years and years later. It's kind of the way that some of these technologies do work. Let me get to a few more of your questions before we're out of time, including from some of you who are just fans of space exploration. Leslie emailed, "Thank you to NASA. My son is 7 and is absolutely fascinated by New Horizons and its mission. We've both learned a lot in recent weeks about space. As an adult, I'm amazed at the sheer vastness of space. It's really hard to comprehend how big the universe is. Both my son and I are hopeful that New Horizons will be able to continue its mission and find other objects and send back information." We also heard from one of you who is interested in space and space engineering. Here's what they left in our inbox.
My name is Oheen Gaston, calling from Silver Spring, Maryland, calling about my experience with NASA. I had an internship with the NASA SHARP program, which was a program that's designed to put minorities with engineers. And mine was a mechanical engineer by the name of Alfonso Stewart, whom had such a positive impact on my life. It has always propelled my interest in science and space. I'm African-American, 36 years old. And again, we need more opportunities like this for African-American males and females, but all persons of color.
Oheen, thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. Professor O'Keefe, what are your thoughts on cultivating the next generation of NASA scientists, engineers, maybe even administrators?
Well, this is the very nature of one of the very core principles of why NASA was founded in 1958. The idea was to inspire that next generation of explorers that then in turn is a catalyst to all the economic development, technology development, all the other things that go on. So as a consequence, the Apollo program and all the great achievements we saw in the 70s, 60s and 70s as a result of that, was in part generated for that very goal, how to motivate this. So, you know, your caller that said, my 7-year-old son has been now motivated and inspired by New Horizons. Is that on the same scale as Apollo? No. But at the same time, that's the contribution that this element is this capability, this agency is still able to make to our society overall. And most importantly, it is to yield to the human desire to want to explore. And that's something that all of us as humans share.
I should note, by the
this
way, Professor, I know we got to go shortly, but it's also worth noting that China said that it had landed on the far side of the moon in recent weeks. So clearly this, you know, the space exploration is not purely an American province. It's very international. I wonder what you read into that, into the increasingly international nature of this exploration before we go.
Again, another manifestation of the fact that all of us are humans. We all want to explore. We all want to understand what's on the other side of the ridge. And everybody across this planet shares that desire. So this is something we're going to need to contend with. Over the course of time, you know, this has been a domain that the United States has dominated. But over time, there's been an awful lot more nation states and other interests that have found their way into this, as well as now private investors who are viewing this as a great opportunity to understand more about our neighborhood, defined very broadly.
One more quick comment before we go. Mark's listening in McLean, Virginia. Mark emailed, "The same science that got us to Ultima says the Earth is warming. Believe one, believe them all." Sean O'Keefe, a professor at Syracuse, former administrator of NASA, and former secretary of the Navy. Professor O'Keefe, thanks very much for talking to us.
Hey, thanks, Joshua. Nice to be with you.
This conversation was produced by Bianca Martin. To learn more about her and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. Remember, President Trump will speak tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern to the nation, making his case for the border wall. If you listen to that speech, we would love to hear your thoughts on it, whether or not it changed your viewpoint or maybe cemented your views. Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.